American military bases appear all over the map. Germany and Japan, two countries the United States defeated in World War II, ended up home to large numbers of bases. One of the biggest is the American Air Base at Ramstein, Germany. It's not just the size that presents an issue for our next guest. It is the role of Ramstein in American drone warfare. Norman Solomon wrote about Ramstein in The Nation this month. He's a journalist with ExposeFacts.org, a project of the Institute for Public Accuracy, which he founded. He's the author of War Made Easy and a co-founder of RootsAction.org. He ran for Congress in the California 2nd District 4 years ago, finishing third in the primary. He joined us late that year to talk about how to build a grassroots power base. So, Norman Solomon, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hey, thanks very much.
Now, Roots Action, with which you're connected, advocates the closing of Ramstein. What's the major issue with it?
Well, really, there are several major issues, so to speak. One is that it is the place in the world that relays drone signals between places where the United States is using drones, like Afghanistan, Pakistan, Somalia, Yemen, and so forth, and the United States in Nevada, actually, right near us here in this part of the country. And that's been called extrajudicial killings, assassinations. Many human rights groups have challenged it. We talk a lot about the number of people. We can argue, and the White House gives a certain figure, and then other figures come from other groups. But it's also the experience that David Rohde, the former New York Times reporter, described about when he was in captivity in Pakistan, that there are these aircraft hovering overhead 24/7, and you never know at any moment whether that moment will be your last. And so I think that's one of the big objections to Ramstein, or as Americans call it, Ramstein, because it is, in a sense, a form of terrorizing large populations in different parts of the world, and then, of course, that being done in the name of fighting terrorism. So that's one big problem. But also, my article at thenation.com also talks about the way in which Ramstein is really a central, grand central station, you might say, for the entire misnamed war on terror. I went on a C-130J turboprop plane there that is bringing troops, materiel, bombs, all sorts of weaponry to many countries in Africa. We don't even know about those wars. And so this is part of what Martin Luther King Jr. described as the madness of militarism, the nonstop war that has become so normalized.
So Ramstein is called Little America. Why does it have that designation?
Well, I was surprised to learn that the Pentagon tells us that area in southwestern Germany is actually the largest concentration of Americans outside of the United States. So there are 57,000 Americans just clustered around a dozen U.S. military bases there near the city of Kaiserslautern. They call it the Kaiserslautern Military Community, and you might say that Ramstein is the crown jewel of that entire configuration. It is massive. It is huge. I discovered when I was there that just 10 miles from Ramstein is the largest depot for weaponry outside the United States. And they had gotten their biggest shipments back in February in 10 years, which, again, circles back to Jeffrey, to one of your other questions here earlier in our discussion, which is that it's also a focal point area, Ramstein and the other bases in that configuration, for confronting Russia. We have a ginning up of a new Cold War, an enormous push, really, to literally bring NATO to the borders of Russia, and that is extremely dangerous. I mean, if people are nostalgic for the Cold War and hair-trigger nuclear confrontation, we are moving in that direction.
So you have an issue with that, clearly, and I've often wondered about the view from the other side, because you got Russia thinking this is not great to have forces from NATO right up against countries that border us, in countries that border us, which is something we didn't particularly want when there were the possibility of Soviet missiles coming to Cuba.
Well, this is so important. Imagine that if the Warsaw Pact, which did exist during the Cold War as the Soviet-led military alliance, Mexico had been on the verge of joining the Warsaw Pact, I don't think it would go over too big in Washington. And yet, after the Berlin Wall fell, there was a promise first from the first President Bush and then from President Clinton that NATO would not expand eastward. And yet, that's exactly what has been done. President Obama was recently at a huge conference caucus configuration of world leaders aligned with the United States in Poland, where so-called anti-ballistic missile systems are being put in, which Kremlin, again, from you look out the window from the Kremlin, you see that that is a formula for first strike, which was always an objection during the Reagan era about the so-called Star Wars system. So, I mean, I think we're on a very dangerous path here, and I say that as somebody who, like so many others, grew up during the Cold War and was relieved after the wall fell that we would have a potential to move in a different direction.
So, Norman Solomon, let's flip the equation around, though, because the argument is also made that you need to make sure that you show Vladimir Putin where the fence is, because otherwise hijinks ensue, as they certainly have with the annexation of the Crimean Peninsula.
Well, that's definitely a point of view from those who are sometimes called neoconservatives or liberal interventionists, that somehow we need to push up against the border of Russia to show that we can't be pushed around. But do as we say, not as we do, is never very convincing. And when the U.S. Continues to move its military and its military alliances closer to Russia, that's conveying a message which, from the Russian vantage point, says we're in trouble here. We are in under threat. And as a matter of fact, the enunciated ideology of much that holds sway now in Washington and policy circles is regime change. Of course, we saw it implemented in Iraq and then in Libya with terrible effects, in Libya then bringing us ISIS. We see a regime change policy that has been brought to fruition in Syria with terrible carnage. And it's not irrational for Russians to believe that there is a regime change policy and goal aimed towards the Kremlin.
Norman Solomon's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a journalist with ExposedFacts.org, RootsFaction.org as well. He is a former candidate for Congress in California's 2nd District, which we serve part of, and also the author of a book called War Made Easy. We're talking primarily about Ramstein Air Base in Germany. You can join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. I want to get back to the drone warfare part of this. You said it's a relay, so the drone pilots are not there. Is that right?
Yes, I got to interview several former drone pilots and what they call sensors, as well as a technician who works in Afghanistan to build some of the digital relay infrastructure. And the situation is that in these remote areas, such as, say, Afghanistan, there's really no way to have a quick fiber optic cable system to relay the drone images. And technically, they call it a latency period. You know, if you're sitting in Nevada and you want to push pull a trigger, essentially, you don't want a lot of delay between what you're seeing on the screen and what's really happening in real time. So what the U.S. military has done is set up a system where, by satellite, the signal is relayed to Germany, to the Ramstein base, and that can take 3 or 4 seconds of delay. But then once it's in Germany by fiber optic cable, in a split fraction of a second, it is on the screen in Nevada. So this is the goal that the Pentagon has been pursuing. And this Air Force base that we're talking about is really central to that entire process. The politics in Germany is such that 2 out of 3 people in that country by polling oppose the drone war. And so there's sort of a contradiction, because the German government is actually quite complicit in this entire operation.
And you mentioned talking to some of the drone pilots. You talked with several people who worked on and with drones. I mean, what are some of the issues they have with the program itself?
One of the main issues is the diffusion or disappearance of personal responsibility. They felt that the tactic of the Pentagon has been to make nobody responsible. Everybody has their sort of tunnel vision silo, and yet they're part of a drone war that is counterproductive, and many people feel immoral. Counterproductive because even internal Pentagon assessments have said that the drone war creates more people who hate and want to kill Americans than it kills. It creates, so to speak, more terrorists than it kills. But also, from a moral standpoint, many of the drone pilots, and I interviewed several of them, felt that they had become inured to the human involvement. They were trained to act and think as though they were playing a video game, when actually they were extinguishing life, quite often civilian life. They were seeing pixels on a screen and playing God many, many thousands and continents of miles away, and that was morally, cumulatively, very disturbing for several of the pilots and sensors and technicians who I interviewed.
You know, people in America can usually tick off a list of places where drones have been used on a regular basis. You mentioned Afghanistan, some use in Iraq, some in Pakistan, some in Yemen in recent years. But then you bring up in the article in The Nation, AFRICOM. What is that, and where in Africa is it focused?
Yes, as I learned, AFRICOM, which is short for, you know, the Africa Command, was set up 8 years ago, about a two-hour drive from the Ramstein base in the German city of Stuttgart. And initially it was to be a temporary location there. It was a new command that the Pentagon had set up to basically wage war and cooperate with African governments in waging war. And now almost every country in Africa is actively involved in military maneuvers, cooperation, and some form of military action with the United States. And it's really quite stunning that I was able to look through WikiLeaks at some secret and confidential classified documents. And 8 years ago, the U.S. government was sending cable traffic back and forth from its embassy in Berlin to Washington saying, well, we're setting this up. We know that essentially it needs to be a AFRICOM headquarters outside of Africa, because we can't think of an African country that would tolerate having AFRICOM in Africa. So we're setting up in Germany, and it's quote-unquote temporary. And yet, almost 8 years later here, Jeffrey, there's no sign of any intention to leave. So this temporary AFRICOM base has become pretty much de facto permanent.
The base we're talking about is the Ramstein Air Base in Germany, one of the largest American military bases overseas. Norman Solomon is a journalist and a media critic, and he wrote about Ramstein in The Nation this month. You can join us on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned polls showing about two-thirds of Germans opposed to the mission of the base at Ramstein. There have been demonstrations, I understand, within the last month or so. How many people showed up?
Yes, it's actually been a growing effort there. Last September, there were about 1,500 people who showed up. This time, by most news accounts, 4,000 to 5,000 people just a few weeks ago showed up on a rainy afternoon and had what they call the human chain, about 5 miles long around Ramstein. And it's a growing movement, and yet, as I discovered spending 4 weeks around the Ramstein base this spring, there's a tremendous economic footprint. You know, just imagine in California or even Oregon, which is relatively speaking to states like Washington, not that militarized, but still, when you get near a U.S. military base, there are a lot of dollars flying around, and for hotel and restaurants and businesses and so forth, and it's an economic boom for that region. So there's sort of a doublethink there, you might say. People don't like the drone war, and yet the Angela Merkel government in Germany is very aligned, although, as I say in the article, there's a kind of a don't ask, don't tell attitude from the German government. We don't know what's going on at Ramstein. We don't know what's going on in AFRICOM. And really, between the lines, we don't want to know.
Well, does Angela Merkel, or do any German political leaders, for that matter, have the ability to say to the Americans, stop the drones or get out of Ramstein, which clearly they don't particularly want to do, at least about the get out part. But I mean, what is the you got what the public feels about drones. What do the political leaders say out loud?
Well, most of the political leaders, certainly in the center-right government of Germany, say we don't have a problem with this. And theoretically, the German parliament, the Bundestag, could order the U.S. bases out, any specific base or any one of the, and this is hard to imagine, 174 U.S. military bases still in Germany. So it would be the prerogative of the German government to say, we're giving you your eviction notice. There's a status of forces agreement, but we can invoke certain provisions there, and you've got a couple years to pack up and leave a particular base, or all of the bases for that matter. On the other hand, there are only about one out of five members of the Bundestag who are either from the Green Party or the Left Party, which in German is Die Linke. And so they don't have the leverage, even though all of the Left Party and some of the Green Party is very upset about this use of U.S. bases, really, in Germany for the drone war and war in Africa.
Norman, given how the United States essentially rebuilt Germany and Japan after World War II, and they are the top two countries for American bases, I mean, how much, for example, of Germany's military and intelligence systems grew from seeds planted by the United States?
Very enmeshed. I mean, it's notable that the three countries where there are the most U.S. military bases are the three Axis powers, Germany, Italy, and Japan. That's no coincidence. And, you know, when you stop and think about it, it's kind of logical, although I think it's had some very anti-democratic results. The U.S. comes in 1945. It is the occupier. It strings together some of the remnants of the Third Reich intelligence services. It brings in specialists who helped to train and set up what became the BND, the German intelligence service that we have today. So the U.S. Planted the seeds, tended the seeds, and put up the fence around the garden. And really, today, the cooperation between U.S. and German intelligence services is totally knotted together. And you're reminding me, Jeffrey, I would add that there's a direct tie between the drone issue and the surveillance issue. There's been an inquiry committee for 2 years now at the Bundestag to investigate what Edward Snowden revealed about NSA surveillance inside Germany and NSA cooperation with the German government to do surveillance around the world. And really, the drone war is an attack on people's cell phones. That's how people are located and attacked. And so getting people's information about their cell phones and the surveillance process is integral to the drone process.
All right, so let me understand. The BND, which is Germany's intelligence service, gains benefits from what goes on at Rammstein.
Yes, one hand is washing the other. There's a total cooperation between the CIA, for instance, and the NSA on the one hand, and BND on the other. And they're unfortunately, I believe, they're totally enmeshed, which does not speak well for democracy in Germany or perhaps for ours either.
Your article in The Nation makes what's going on there and the ramping up of activities sound a bit like a corporate expansion. Start us off with what's RPA?
Oh, well, that's the remotely piloted aircraft acronym for drones, and it's extremely lucrative. I quote testimony from a top Pentagon official in March before a Senate subcommittee in my article saying that the use of drones has increased fivefold in the last decade. And I note that, for instance, one of the very strong public advocates for the drone program, the former CIA and NSA Director General Michael Hayden, is on the board of directors of Motorola Corporation, which has major investment in drones itself. And so he picked up a tidy $240,000 last year for being on the board of directors, you know, just about $250,000. That's pretty good pay for perhaps going to a few meetings a year and on the side advocating as though he were some sort of objective commentator for the drone program that's enriching the company.
Which brings up a question from Mike in Medford via email. He writes, with the revolving door of the Pentagon and the private arms industry, combined with Congress bought off through quote-unquote legal campaign contributions, it seems the military-industrial complex will lead us to be the world's true axis of evil. How can you stop a trillion-dollar industry? That's what Mike in Medford wants to know.
Well, it's very tough because, as Mike is saying from Medford, this is a powerful dynamic that outgoing President Dwight Eisenhower dubbed the military-industrial complex, and he expressed at that point some very well-grounded concern, and certainly the reasons for concern have mushroomed since then. It's very hard to defeat forces that make a huge profit from continuation of war. As a matter of fact, Sean Westmoreland, one of the drone whistleblowers I interviewed, said, and I quote him in the piece, that he realized ultimately, being in the U.S. Air Force, that it was a for-profit venture, both individually for some of these revolving door travelers who end up making a pile of money on these boards of directors and so forth, and just for the armaments industry in general, which certainly is ultimately a trillion-dollar-plus industry.
So, Norman Solomon, let's get the dream and the doable from you. If you got to get your way with Rammstein, what would happen to it?
Well, I think that it would be a shift in Rammstein as part of a shift of U.S. foreign policy, which is that we are not going to win a whack-a-mole process of the so-called war on terror that actually creates more enemies than it could ever vanquish. And to me, it would involve, as we need to do in so many parts of our own country in the world, demilitarizing so that we have legitimate defense rather than having an aggressive foreign policy that enriches these corporations. Well, here at home, whether it's Oregon, Washington, or anywhere else, we've got healthcare, education, housing, prenatal care, neonatal care, elderly care, that's going wanting because our society in many ways, including our infrastructure, is being left withering on the vine. So it's a reordering of priorities, and I think closing the Rammstein base would be part of that. It would free up a lot of resources back home.
All right, that's the dream. What's the doable? What do you think is politically, economically, and militarily possible?
Well, as Kennedy, John F. Kennedy said in another context, you know, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. I think that we need to do a lot of organizing back home, a lot of education, a lot of civic work. I think that the Bernie Sanders campaign helped to raise some of those issues about overspending in the military. And at the same time, when somebody does speak out in politics, like Senator Merkley, for instance, we should support them speaking out against what King again called the madness of militarism.
Norman Solomon is a journalist and a media critic connected to ExposeFacts.org and RootsAction.org. His article about the Rammstein Air Base is in The Nation in the July 7th issue. Norman, thanks for joining us once again on the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, thank you, Jeffrey.
Pleasure.